today on Ag News Daily.
Have those conversations with your kids. If you really think they're coming back to the farm, ask them, are you coming back? What's your plan?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Mike Pearson, co-host of today's edition of the Ag News Daily podcast, joined by Ms. Delaney Howell, who is currently traveling. She is in beautiful upstate New York, a great place to be on February 5th. Delaney, how you doing out there?
I'm doing pretty good. You know what? Actually, the weather here is pretty favorable, especially for the middle of February, beginning of February, I should say. But
really? What kind of temps are you talking up there?
I mean, it's like 35, 40, but it's not snowy, it's not icy, it's not really particularly cold, so I consider it a win.
There you go. Hey, you can't go wrong with that.
Absolutely. So yeah, I was at the Northeast Agriculture and Feed Alliance annual meeting, so learned a lot about Northeastern agriculture, specifically the dairy industry.
Yeah, so bring us up to speed. We've talked a lot about the dairy industry in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and Michigan, and Iowa, and Minnesota. That is a sector of industry that has been absolutely battered. I've heard similar stories out of New York, basically any place that touches Canada, since they added their Class 7 milk thing. What are you hearing on the ground up there, Delaney?
So I think there's some mixed sentiment across the dairy industry. So we do have, like you said, the Michigan, the Wisconsin areas that are definitely drastically seeing a drop in dairy farms. But then compared to New York, year over year, New York is actually doing pretty favorably, all things considered, with the economic outlook for the dairy industry. And one of those reasons is because of a program called New York Farm Net, which actually grabbed an interview with one of their outreach directors, Kate Downs, and I'll play that here in just a little bit, but they have programs in place to help dairy farmers so that if they're faced with a challenge, if they have a decision to make, they don't always just resort to filing Chapter 12 bankruptcy. I was talking to one of the gentlemen with that company today. He said, you know, a lot of other states don't have companies like that, and so dairy producers don't feel like there's another choice, that it's file Chapter 12 or continue suffering financially. And so, interestingly enough, here in New York, it seems like they've got some programs put in place to help that, so there's other choices to be made.
That is interesting, Glenn. I'm looking forward to that interview because it does sound like it's a nice escape hatch for folks looking for a different way to kind of get out of the mud when it comes to looking at Chapter 12 or
separation
or staying in business.
And just helping with your mental and physical health as well. I mean, there's so much stress on dairy producers. We also talked about rural suicide, which is kind of a taboo topic to talk about in agriculture, but one that definitely needs to be addressed a little bit more. So a lot of good stuff coming up.
All right. Well, stay tuned, listeners. I've got a couple of pieces of news. All in all, it's a fairly slow news day. But we did get the report from Creighton University. They released their Rural Main Street Index. They released this monthly. And in January, it climbed to its highest level since June 2018. The fifth month in a row that the overall sentiment on Main Street has climbed. And they do the survey. Creighton does this by polling bank CEOs. So they're looking at a 10-state region, and they're getting out there talking to large banks, a lot of community banks, folks who are embedded in the community, and getting their thought, okay, how are businesses looking? What are you seeing on your portfolio? And they're getting more optimistic. So it is nice to see some of the boom in the equity markets and the home prices trickling down to Main Street here in rural America, Delaney.
Yeah, but there were some mixed reviews on that report, Mike, as regards to expansion on farms. Interviewed just 2 years ago, we saw about 28% of farmers saying no, they don't plan to expand now in 2020. We're seeing about 44% of farmers say they have no plans to expand, largely due to the economic situation and trade fears continuing with China, especially after yesterday Larry Kudlow's comment that this coronavirus thing could perhaps delay us at least 6 months from seeing China really come to the buying table, as mentioned.
Yes, that Kudlow piece was my next bit of news. I'm glad you discussed it yesterday, Delaney, because that is, that's a concern. China's going to use this as leverage when it comes time to make their purchases. They're going to use this as their escape hatch when it comes to writing those checks.
Yeah, and I was talking to some folks about that today. It's just oh so convenient that once we have a trade deal in place, we see some other piece of, we'll call it black swan news, that suddenly delays China's purchases even further. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, Mike, but, I mean, that's a little conspiracy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think it's convenient for the people that have died from coronavirus.
No,
I think they would say this is a rather inconvenient timing.
Absolutely. Very inconvenient timing, you're right, but it's just frustrating. Not surprising, but very frustrating.
Right. That's the challenge. Is, you know, we were hoping to get a win. By all indications, it looked like we'd put this trade war on hold. Maybe not a win, but at least truce, a push, back
or dispute.
Or before, and now, you know, shoot, we're sliding backwards yet again. But not only that, we have competitors, of course, around the world, and Brazil continues to grow its corn acreage. In fact, in Brazil, they are seeing acreage expand for corn plantings. Mato Grosso, one of the key growing regions for corn and soybeans down in Brazil, reports that they are seeing acreage planted to corn rise 5% because of the higher demand. In that province, planted acreage is expected to hit 5.1 million, I believe it's hectares, and they think that this could be some of the biggest plantings for corn in quite a few years. I believe the number quoted was 2013, but it might be the biggest on record there in that province. So we've got the South Americans continuing to chomp at our heels as they have enjoyed really unprecedented access to the market in China over the past 13 months, Lenny.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to win if China doesn't come to the buying table with the coronavirus thing, including Brazil.
Well, you know, but they still need to feed the rest of their population. So if Brazil is cheaper, and with the turmoil in Brazil and Argentina, the real and peso have been much cheaper than the U.S. dollar, and so that's where China's been spending its money. It's, you know, unrest always, well, typically breeds a lower currency price, and that opens up the door for exporters to move in and take care of some business.
Definitely. But looking at, we were just talking a little bit ago about wins for agriculture or lack of wins. Well, we've seen a lack of winner in the Iowa caucuses. Mike talked about this a little bit yesterday, but when I recorded the podcast yesterday, we really still didn't have any preliminary results. As of today, we still don't really have any final conclusions because so much of the polling process went wrong with a functionality of the polling app that they were using for the caucuses, people not knowing how to use it, not having it downloaded correctly, etc. But we do have kind of some preliminary results as of now. About 65% roughly of Iowa caucuses have been determined, with the leader coming in at about 27%, led by Mayor Pete Buttigieg, followed by Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden coming in fourth. Iowa continues to be the front runner, the state that everybody tries to caucus for first, but because of all of this debacle with counting and whatnot, a lot of folks are putting pressure, I don't know who they're putting pressure on, but are saying, demanding that Iowa be removed as the first initial caucus state, which could really hurt agriculture because so many of those candidates take a stance on ethanol, renewable fuels, and agriculture as part of their policy rollouts when they're caucusing and campaigning. And if Iowa is not the first state they visit, not one of the ones that are counted as most important in that process, we could see those candidates step back from using agriculture as part of their main campaign running pieces.
Yes. I think you're exactly right, Delaney. That is the headline fact about the caucuses leaving Iowa. Iowa, as you mentioned, we were the only state that had a large ag base, a large ag manufacturing base, a large ag service base that was able to get words in to presidential candidates. And if we end up losing that first in the nation, really all of agriculture loses its ability to have a first in the nation. And it sounds like the Democrats are really seeing that pressure. But if they go, the Republicans will go as well, and we will be running with the rest of the pack, it sounds like.
Yes, so a little piece of unfortunate news there. Hopefully that doesn't happen, and I don't know exactly what the process would be like to see that happen, but
yeah, I don't know either.
Digging. Yeah, I'm going to do some digging.
Perfect. Well, speaking of digging, it's what you do in the ground, Delaney, and that is my awkward segue to a story from Farmers National. They have just published their report looking ahead to 2020 when it comes to farmland values, and they say that sales are starting to pick up on farms across the country. The first 6 months were as slow as they've ever been, according to some of the salespeople, but it is starting to grow. And they're seeing prices continue to vary wildly, with exceptional ground still bringing top dollar. They talk about an auction that happened just recently, and it was $13,000 an acre. So that's not too far off the highs from 2012-13, well, 13-14 anyway. So we're seeing this thing move ahead, and they don't expect to see a huge break in cash rents going forward. They don't expect to see a huge break in land prices going forward, because at the end of the day, we produce a heck of a lot of food for a heck of a lot of people very efficiently, and none of these other countries can do that.
Absolutely, and to follow up with that too, for 2000 until 2020, we saw net cash farm income do a roller coaster ride, if you will, but net cash farm income is forecasted to drop 9% in 2020, Mike, possibly because of stable land values and other trade and tariff impacts and whatnot, but that's just according to the USDA's latest forecast. You can argue how accurate you think that is, but that's another piece of news in the pipeline today.
Well, Delaney, that does it. I am all out of news. Should we move over and take a look at what the markets did today? What do you say?
Let's do that. And just as a precursor, we're cutting a little early today, so the markets haven't quite adjusted yet for prices. But, Mike, I know you watch them pretty closely now. Tell us what they've been doing overall during today's trading session.
You bet. So as we head into the close, listeners, remember that we've got mixed trade in the grains. It's been a volatile day. We saw a lot of excitement in the overnights that quickly fell away as the day session got started. As things stand today, remember, we're not quite closed yet, but we will be in about 7 minutes. The March 2020 corn contract is down 1.25 cents at 381 even. The May, down a penny at 387 even. Over in soybeans, they have bounced back to the upside. The March contract up 880 and 3/4, excuse me, up 1.25 to close or to trade right now at 880 and 3/4. The May up 8, geez, up 1.5, trading at 894 and a half. In wheat, again, a lot of volatility today. It was following corn, and then it kind of tried to pull corn higher as we went into the later part of the session. The March contract was up 3.5 cents at 560 and 3/4. The May up 3.5 as well to finish at 558 even. Hopefully finish. Remember, we haven't closed yet. I apologize. Looking over at the world of livestock, we've got weakness pretty well all down the screen. This has been in place all day today. April live cattle down currently $1.65 at 119 even. The June down $1.17 half, finishing at or trading right now at 110.5750. In feeder cattle, the March down $1.8750 at 135.62 half. The April down $1.72 half to close or to trade presently at 137.2. Lean hogs, same story. April down 47 half, trading at 61.85, and the May down 60 cents, currently trading at 70.30. Can't forget about our friends over in the dairy industry, especially now that Delaney is getting to know more and more of them up there in the Northeast. Class 3 milk today is lower. The February contract down 14 cents on the day, at currently trading at 16.89. The March down 0.25 cents at 17.05. And Delaney, that does it. Let's kick it off to your interview there from Albany, New York.
Well, I am catching up with Kate Downs, who is the Outreach Director for New York FarmNet. And Kate, you talk about a lot of important subjects in agriculture, not necessarily fun subjects, though. Tell us first, before we get into some of those nitty-gritty subjects, tell us a little bit more about New York FarmNet and what role you guys play.
Sure. So New York FarmNet is a really incredible organization that's been around since the 1980s farm crisis, and we provide free and confidential on-farm support for any farmer in New York State. We have financial consultants who can provide that business analysis, that business planning, and then we also have family consultants who are trained social workers or family counselors to help families deal with difficult conversations, because working with family on a farm is not easy. And so we help them have those conversations right at their kitchen table or in the barn.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of conversations that don't happen that maybe need to happen on the farm more often than not. Kate, also I wanted to ask a little bit about more about your background and how you got into this role.
Sure. So I studied agricultural business at SUNY Cobleskill. My family had a small dairy farm. My dad was a high school ag educator for 35 years. So we had, you know, I always was surrounded by agriculture, especially dairy farming. And then we lost my uncle to suicide after he sold the farm. And that really sort of launched my career in this trajectory. You know, I'd always studied agriculture, and, you know, I realized after my uncle died that this was a really important area that I didn't think anybody was talking about. And then I found New York FarmNet, and they're doing this work. They're helping farmers. They're having those conversations that need to happen on and around the farm, and it just, it was a match.
That's really neat, too, that you had a personal connection to it. I mean, I think to do that type of work, you'd really have to have a personal connection just because you're dealing with a lot of sticky situations.
Yeah, yeah. And, I started out in FarmNet as I was the main person answering the phone, and that was 4 years ago. And so I got to have a lot of conversations with a lot of farmers. And, you know, it's pretty incredible. By the time they reach out and reach out for help, you know, they're at the end of their rope. They're just so distraught. They don't know how to move on. And, you know, I might be on the phone with that farmer for 45 minutes, and they're in tears, and I'm just a random voice at the end of the phone. But it gives them a chance to, again, air their grievances and just kind of talk through things. But it also allows them to be seen and heard and know that there's someone there who cares about them, who wants them alive, and wants their farm to keep farming. You know, the fact that we can provide this service to farmers is really amazing, because there's not really any other program just like ours in the U.S. And I think, you know, I really give New York State a lot of credit for supporting our program, because, you know, farmers are hurting, and, you know, it's never gone away. You know, people knew about the 1980s, and, you know, then things got better, and then they got worse. But this, you know, long scrape that we've had in the dairy industry really has really done a number on a lot of people. So
yeah.
The fact that we can help them at this point is really huge.
Yeah, the dairy industry is definitely the one that's had maybe some of the more tumultuous past events. But before they get to that point of maybe tossing in the towel, not to take it too lightly, but just the management of stress.
Sure.
So farmers are a very resilient bunch, as you know.
They're so resilient.
And they're not ones to talk about their problems and manage maybe stress the best way. And mental health is still a little bit of a taboo, I would say, within the ag community. How do you go about talking to those folks with all those factors considered?
So I usually start talking to them about something else because it's just easier for them to ask for help related to, you know, financing a tractor or something like that, something that benefits the farm. And then, you know, I will work in the stress management, their own stress management, their personal well-being. And, you know, our family consultants are really the magic workers, and our financial consultants too. They're really a great team, and they can help bring that farmer, you know, help ground them in a way. It might be taking 5 breaths before they get on the tractor in the morning. You know, that's not anything fancy. We all breathe. We all have to breathe. But it can be really simple things like that, or just going for a walk around the farm. Just check out that field. Just walk it instead of driving the tractor. There's a lot of things farmers can do that are really, really simple that they probably already do. They just might not think about it. So just, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do to help yourself before it gets really, really bad.
Yeah, and we hope that it doesn't get to that point for farmers,
sure,
and that they reach out to trusted friends or advisors before that. But once they're at that point, and suicide is just such a serious topic. You look at agriculture, we've got one of the highest suicide rates. Why do you think there continues to be this taboo around talking about suicide within agriculture?
I think a lot of it has to do with there's just a deep stigma, you know, societally. It's not easy to talk about, and only just now are people sort of comfortable with talking about it and talking about mental health, let alone some of the more deeper issues like suicide. I also think because of that, people don't have the language to use to talk about it in a way that feels sort of comfortable. And a lot of the work I do is bringing that language to the farmers, to the agri-service providers that work with them, and just enabling them to have these conversations. I think it's so, so important. You know, you can't sweep it under the rug. It's everywhere. You know, we've had one county in Western New York this year, they lost 5 farmers in 6 months. And, you know, they were not dairy farmers, but the stress was there, and they just felt so alone that that's what happened. So we just need to keep having these conversations, normalizing it. Everybody everybody should have someone to talk to. You know, and talk therapy is not for everyone, but if it does work for you, that's great. Sometimes medications need to happen too, and that's also okay. I think we just need to be, it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to reach out for help. Nobody expects anybody to be perfect all of the time. And I think just accepting that this is something that can happen to people is just one of those things that we're learning.
And I've got to say, too, I feel like you're really the first speaker that I've ever heard to say, you just need to be direct in asking that question, are you considering suicide, or is that something that's on your mind? And again, I'm just surprised that this hasn't been mentioned before.
Yeah, so I think I've been to a lot of trainings because this is what I'm interested in and I feel very passionately about it. And, you know, I think when talking about suicide, we often talk to behavioral healthcare providers and social workers and that, but we don't necessarily think of people outside of those healthcare communities. And so bringing that conversation that's happening over here and bringing it to the agricultural community is probably the best way we can help them. And the trainings I went to were not ag-specific. I have just turned them into ag-specific things because I know that this is what's happening in our state. So, mental health first aid, Safe Talk, there's tons of trainings out there that can really help educate you, can really give you a baseline knowledge of different mental health disorders. You know, anxiety and depression are the most common. And, I mean, everybody struggles with those things, I think. So just being able to really talk about them in a way just that's open and, you know, it's not necessarily comfortable, but sort of easy to talk about, I think is really important and will only help everybody in future generations.
And another subject that's a little bit easier to talk about than perhaps mental health or suicide is the succession planning, what to do with the farm, when is that right point for the older generation to pass it on to the next generation. And you mentioned, you didn't talk about it too much today, but you just mentioned briefly on dealing with life after the farm for those guys and gals that are finally ready to maybe take a step back from the farm. What's your advice for finding out what's next for that group of people?
Plan ahead. Don't wait. you know, have those conversations with your kids. If you really think they're coming back to the farm, ask them, are you coming back? What's your plan? And then let's start to work on that plan and how to work you into the business and work you into the fold. Otherwise, you know, there could be a lot of bad relationships that happen and really angry conversations that may not have needed to happen. You know, if you start talking about it gradually as, you know, the next generation's in college, or it might be a cousin or a nephew or someone, maybe they want to be involved in the farm. But just don't be afraid to ask and bring them in, and don't be afraid to plan ahead. I think a lot of farmers are not known for thinking about estate planning or retiring or, you know, what could they do if they sell the farm, or if they have to sell the farm, what could they do?
And I think that's a good point, too. You know, you don't always get to make that decision. Maybe you have health issues or something happens that changes your trajectory. How do you suggest to farmers about finding their purpose if they have to take a step back from farming?
That's really where our family consultants, their magic shines through. You know, they can help a farmer realize that they're not just a farmer. Farmers are so, so much more. They're, you know, the owner-operator. They're the mechanic. They are the herdsman. They are all these different things. And they show up day in and day out in rain and sleet and snow up to their eyeballs in New York. You know, they show up, and that makes them so, so employable. And helping them connect those dots and realizing, oh, I can do this. I don't have to be the farm owner, I can go farm for another person and still get to do that and satisfy that need and that desire. Or they may, you know, turn and work for an agri-service provider or work for cooperative extension. You know, there's lots of opportunities for farmers, and people love hiring them because they're such good employees, and they show up and they're not afraid to do the hard work. So it's just, you know, it's uncomfortable because it's different, but don't be afraid to make that change.
Oh, fantastic. Well, Kate, before I let you go, share with us for farmers, especially those in New York, how can they find some of the resources that are offered that you've been discussing?
Sure. So you can reach FarmNet on our 800 helpline, which is 1-800-547-3276. Or you can find us online at www.nyfarmnet.org.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Well, again, a big thank you there to Kate from New York Farm Net. Really interesting stuff, as I mentioned, working to help that dairy producer feel like they've got other options besides filing bankruptcy or getting out of the farming business.
Yeah, it's always great to have options. Keep them in your back pocket, folks. And if it works, you know, let's have New York go out and show other states how to put something like this together. It sounds like it's a great program and something that should be looked at to maybe being replicated around the country.
Absolutely, Mike. And speaking of options, we've got a ton of great options when it comes to agricultural podcasts on globalagnetwork.com. Be sure to check us out there, as well as the Ag News Daily podcast there. You can also interact with Global Ag Network and Ag News Daily on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for @GlobalAgNetwork and @AgNewsDaily. Mike, with that, I'm heading down to San Antonio, so hopefully I'll see some of our listeners there, but should we let the people go?
Let them go, Delaney.